Welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Pamela.
I'm Katie.
And we have a huge, a fantastic podcast for our listeners today. I am surrounded by an unbelievable amount of talent right now. I am so excited to have 6 artists. 7 artists, because we have one by phone. 7 artists from the Women's Art Gallery and women artists from around the state to talk with you today to honor Women's History Month, because that's been our theme here at the State Library. And all of these women are making history today. So without further ado, we are going to start with Amy, who is on the phone. Amy Loftus Alley. Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to go around the table and introduce all the artists to our listeners.
Okay, well, I live in upstate South Carolina. I live in Greenwood, and I am primarily a painter. I have one son who's 12 years old. I teach elementary art. I've also taught adult classes. I've taught for local universities and continuing ed and stuff like that. And I also work in charcoal. My favorite genre is portraiture, but currently right now I'm focusing on some nature series and some abstracts.
Are you working in charcoal for those?
Yes, I work in charcoal. I love that as a medium. I'm a painter. I work in oil. I like to say my work is kind of conceptual, ecofeminism. I'm also very influenced by nature.
Awesome. Thank you for being here, Amy. Going to go around the table. Jessica Dame.
Hey, I'm Jessica, and I'm actually from Virginia. I moved here for grad school when I decided to come get my library degree here at USC, and I kind of stopped making art for a while when I was in grad school. Got a little too busy, had to read a lot of stuff, read a lot of papers. So there was about a 3 or 4 year break where I wasn't making anything, and prior to that, I was just making stuff for class or just for fun. But in the past 2 years, I decided to take it serious, and I make time for creativity every week. And in the past 2 years, I've got a website up, and nice. I've had a couple of shows, and it's been really fun. I work with mixed media. I like to do a little bit of illustration with ink and watercolor, and I also love collage. And I would say that my influences are minimalism, of course, feminism, also nature, fashion, and I love children's illustration.
I was going to say, I can see you illustrating a children's book one day. I'm waiting for the day where we see illustrated by Jessica Dame.
That'd be amazing.
It would be.
Future goals.
That's right. Now, we also have in the house Michaela Pilar Brown. Hi.
Hello.
Tell us about yourself.
I am a multidisciplinary visual artist. I work across medium. So I work in photography and installation and performance. And
oh, cool.
I paint from time to time, and I do a little collage. I'm from Colorado, but my family roots in South Carolina go back to 1775.
Ooh.
And my father, at the end of his life, decided to move back to his homestead, and that's how I ended up in South Carolina.
Well, we're glad you ended up back here. We are going to hopefully hear from you later about some of your art that is here on display or about to be on display. Have I heard a rumor?
Possibly.
At the Art Museum?
Oh, I've had some work that's going into the permanent collection at the museum.
So Michaela has art pieces going into the Columbia Museum of Art, into their permanent collection.
Well, not that's amazing.
Congratulations. That, to me, that's big news, and it needs to be celebrated. And
yes,
it goes right along the conversation that we were having earlier about women in art and the struggles it takes to get to something extraordinary like that. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
All right. Abstract Alexandra, you're here.
Hello. Hello.
Tell us about yourself.
Abstract Alexandra. Alexandra is my nom de plume, Alexandra White. I run the South Carolina Artist Group. I'm co-owner of the LAC Gallery in Lexington.
The which gallery?
The LAC Gallery, Lexington Artist Collective Gallery, known as LAC.
LAC Gallery.
Because we do not lack for art.
All right.
Not at all. Which Jenny Merritt and Jessica Dames are going to be exhibiting there soon as the guest artist of the month.
Congratulations.
So we're very excited
nice.
About that. But I've been doing art and creating art practically my whole life. There were some times that I became very disgusted and said, I'm done. I'm going to go get an office job. And I hated myself and I had to leave or quit or get fired.
I was like, that didn't last long.
It didn't last long. It's just not for me. My mother was an oil painter. A landscape oil painter. So I have memories of sitting next to her in art classes and painting. But I mainly paint in acrylics and oils, and I teach finger painting classes.
What?
Yeah, because you can actually finger paint better. And you can draw the straightest line with just your finger if you like the tactile. And a lot of people do, but we lose it
We've interesting. Lost it. So I teach a very varied amount of classes. I also am a former art therapist, and that's really about it. I'm just kind of boring. I do a lot of nudes. I like to do the female form, as everyone does, because of the ever-flowing waves of the ocean and the waves of the mountains and the beautiful trees. And the female form is in practically everything in nature, so there's always some kind of combination of female form and nature. And I do abstracts, and I do landscapes, and I do all everything. So from inks to mixed media to oils to acrylics, I do everything.
That's awesome.
I did installation art, which was a lot of fun.
I look forward to learning exhausting. More about installation art, because I don't know about that, so we're going to have to come back to that.
Who's next?
Jenny.
I'm Jenny Merritt, and I've been an artist my whole life. I taught in public education for 30 years, and I've taught at USC and here and yonder, all ages of people. I've done murals in the past and watercolor, but now I like doing collage best. And mostly my themes are of women, and I use a lot of pictures from my grandmother's scrapbook back from the 1920s as inspiration. So I'm kind of honoring the women who came before me in my work. And I just enjoy doing that. I love doing portraits, mainly, of children. I do a lot of my grandchildren and any other women in history.
Very cool.
Thank you.
I'm a huge fan of your collage work that's out there, and I have a very specific question, but I'm going to wait.
Okay. All right.
Hi, our next person is Sandy Knowles. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I am what I would consider an amateur artist because I do not have a degree. I'm a librarian by profession, but I worked my way through several mediums until I found pottery, and now I can't do anything but pottery. It's an addiction. There's something in the clay that you absorb through your hands, I think, and it keeps you addicted. It might happen with paint, too. I do both wheel and hand-building work. I learned most of my craft in Ashland from some of the best potters there are up there. For somebody who never went to school for it, I think I had a pretty good opportunity. Nature is an inspiration for me. All my work must be functional. I cannot leave a pot plain. It has to have some sort of design on it. I especially love doing sgraffito. And right now, I'm on my mandala phase.
I'm addicted to her mandala phase. Addicted.
And flamingos have appeared as well, and which I never saw coming. Because I like to use a dark clay usually and do much more earthy-looking stuff, but lately it's more colorful and airy on white clay, so I really enjoy doing it. It's what keeps me alive.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, I am very personally grateful that you do pottery, because now I have several pieces in my personal collection at home. The other thing I hope to do is share some images without sharing too much detail. We've photographed the gallery, and we definitely want to share everybody's website or Facebook page or whatever on the podcast, so our listeners will be able to reach out to you, you see what you're going through, what you're doing, etc. But we actually have one more artist here, and that's my co-host, Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
So tell us about Katie the artist.
So I love art since I was a little girl, and my first love was actually traditional art. I would delve into painting and drawing, especially with ink and graphite. And then as I got older, especially as I got into college. For those who hate Clemson, I am really sorry, but I went to Clemson University. And,
go Tigers!
there you go. I started really getting into graphic design, especially really initially in high school as I joined yearbook staff. That started becoming more incorporated into my art, and now I like to do a little bit of both. And so I turned into multimedia and just collage work as I got into USC as a grad student. And then started working into more even mobile development and website development. So it's been interesting to try and mix everything together and really just interact and explore different fields.
Well, on a personal note, I can go to Katie with a very abstract idea, an emotional statement. I want this to feel like this, and she will design me a logo that is absolutely perfect. And that's so that's awesome. How I think one of the ways that she uses her art in the workplace, which is just something I don't understand how she does it.
So
thank you.
All right, so let's get on to some questions so our artists can talk, because we have two that have to leave early. But so our listeners can maybe get to understand why art is important, why women in art are important, what the difficulties are, what the road's been like, what you hope for the future, how you want to inspire others. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about. So, Amy, let's start with you with just talking a little bit about what it means to be a woman in the arts. I mean, I know it's a really broad question, but what do you say?
For me personally, I've always been involved in the arts my whole life. I actually got my start in graphic design. I left that field when I moved out of state. I wanted to be more of a studio artist. What I have found is the older I get, the more I'm aware of the struggles I think a lot of women have getting their work represented and taken seriously. And for me, art is my voice. I'm somewhat introverted, and art's a great way for me to speak out. And as an artist and a mother, I sometimes worry that I may not be taken seriously because I'm not able to do a lot of the particular things that some people may be able to do that don't have children. For example, get out there, network, participate in every event. I've got friends who've traveled all over the country promoting their artwork, and I'm not in a position to do that right now as an artist, as a mother of a young child. So I think women artists face different challenges, from how we are perceived to how we are able to market ourselves. Basically, we have families and children. There's a great video called Who Does She Think She Is that tackles this very subject that I saw a few years ago, and it was about people can be a little judgmental if you're taking time away from your family and your home to do something art-related. But for me, I have to do it. I have to find the balance because it's who I am. And I feel like what I have to say in my art is important, and the world needs it.
I'm going to ask the other panel of group here, does that resonate with anybody?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
How? I was fortunate, and I say fortunate, to be a single mom where I called the shots, so my kid came everywhere with me. So she started like I did at the age of 4. She was doing all the art festivals, because I traveled around the country to the art festivals, and people would say, oh, you know, why aren't you taking her to these Mommy and Me classes and all this stuff? And I'm like, ugh. We're going to do art. We're meeting really unique people, and we're looking at life from a different perspective, that it's not just your Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 kind of thing.
Right.
That life is out there and it goes on all the time. So, and just the unique personalities and the varying cultures. We had a great deal of fun growing up. She's in film school now. So
awesome.
I know. I was glad she kind of chose some type of a career in the arts, but I was like, oh, you don't want to paint?
Did you find it a struggle?
You were excited and sad all at once.
I know, but it's nice that she found a creative voice, hopefully. So
that she found a path she feels good with. That's important. That's a good way to raise a daughter.
I agree.
Let them find that path.
It really resonated with me whenever Amy was talking about using art as an outlet to express yourself and also just to get away from everything. It's like 3 of us here work at a library, and I know that we love reading, and I'm sure you guys do too. Mm-hmm. And that's also, it's another art form to where you can kind of escape into a new world. And that's one thing I love about art.
It provides an escape.
Yes.
I guess my life is opposite that. My work is political.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm usually not trying to escape anything when I'm working. I'm usually going head in.
Mm-hmm. You're taking it with you and pushing it through.
And I look for other outlets. I look for other things to get away from studio for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And with regard to family, my partner's an artist.
Yep.
And so we're balancing together. We're managing together.
Mm-hmm.
We make our own schedules, and sometimes he's got a child, sometimes I've got a child, but we work it out.
And she gets your daughter gets an opportunity to go places with you, too, and experience. I know that I've been fortunate enough to go to some events where she's been present.
You know, my mother took me everywhere. Yep. My mother was a security guard at a museum.
Wow.
Part of that experience was exposing me to all of this wonderful art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at all the functions, at all the events, so I saw living artists and working artists, and it became palpable for me. It was real. I could understand what a life in the arts was going to look like.
Right.
You know, and I want her to have lots of options now. I won't be mad if she becomes like an engineer. Something else where she can make a little money.
I think the most important thing.
I love hearing this, and that it's not. I take my son everywhere. As a matter of fact, he's fixing to be here now in about 2 minutes.
Oh.
I love hearing that other people are doing the same thing, and I think it's just wonderful to think that our children are having such great opportunities.
Right.
I'm a single mom. He just goes everywhere and rolls with it. And I tell him when he gets ready to rebel, he's going to cut his hair short and go to engineering.
Oh, for
I'm the same way. When I was a single mom when my kids were growing up, and art has always been so important to me that it became important to them. Mm. And I made time for it, but they were in the middle of my studio as well. You know, they were right there too. The struggle for me wasn't being an artist. The struggle was being a single mother. That was hard. Like you talk about the struggle for being an artist in college back in the early 70s, I was told not to put my first name on my artwork, to use my first initial. And to this day, I still put my first initial on some of my artwork just as a kick in the pants, you know, just to say, I am Jenny Merritt, but I'm going to put G Merritt on my artwork just because I can. Mm-hmm. That's all, you know. But yeah, I've never forgotten that little tidbit.
Well, I'm sorry anybody ever told you that, or that there were times where women felt like they had to do that.
Oh, back in the day, they had to. Back when Mary Cassatt.
Sure.
Don't put your full name.
Right.
We don't want you to know that you're a woman. I've seen great changes that women are represented well in art shows, I think. So,
well, they're represented well in the art show here at the State Library because it's all women. It's 17 women from around South Carolina. I'm thrilled. Okay, I know that Amy has to go and Jessica has to go, but Jessica, tell us a little bit about your experience and what it means to you to be a woman in the arts, or what you hope to maybe inspire others to do.
Well, my experience has been a little different. I didn't grow up with any art mentors. No one in my family was an artist. And so I never thought that it could be a real career. I never had any mentors to see what could be done. In the past couple of years with Facebook and Instagram, just following all these amazing women who are illustrators and artists and creators and makers, seeing them do it and seeing all the awesome things they do really inspired me that, hey, I can just do it as well. Why can't I? So that's really inspired me recently, for sure.
Self-empowerment.
Yes, by seeing other women succeed.
It's important. By seeing other women succeed. That is so important. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm hearing two different things. One, if you're exposed to something in your formative years, it's going to affect the rest of your life. Or if you weren't, but you are exposed to women or people like you that have been successful at something, it becomes a possibility. Both of those thoughts really resonate with me. Literacy is improved when we read to our children at home. There's all sorts of literacies. Print, I'm talking print literacy, but what about art literacy? Art literacy is important. If we aren't exposing our children to it, then it's going to take something else to inspire them to take that next step.
And even while earning my art history degree for Christopher Newport University, like, all the teachers were amazing women, but majority of what they teach you are male artists.
Correct.
And so you don't even see in the textbooks that women can succeed. You have to find them on your own. I mean, there's a couple, you can name like five on your hand that they teach you about that, like, everybody knows, but beyond that, you have to teach yourself.
You do.
So how do we counteract that?
Start early.
But I mean, what can our listeners do?
Well, one really cool thing is it's the DC Museum, Women of the Art.
Women in the Arts.
Thank you. They have a campaign for March. It's Can You Name Five Women Artists?
Right.
And they're highlighting different women artists all month long and challenging people.
Okay. It's been going around Facebook. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Because if you can't think of the five off your head, as far as when it comes to history, then you can definitely look them up, which is so amazing. With our tiny little computers, we can just look them up. So it's amazing.
Plus, the museum's great, too. They represent so many different women artists there.
I was lucky. I came from a home where my mother was working, and she was aware of other professional women. She was always encouraging me to follow in their footsteps. I went to Howard University, and my education was centered on blackness, and there are a lot of highly achieving black women in the arts.
Yep.
And I got quite a bit of that really early on. So it was, it's important always to be able to see a reflection of yourself, which is probably the thing that I'm most proud of about having a piece at the museum, is that kids who look like me are going to come in and see possibilities because they see themselves there.
It's so true. It's so true. It's so many different levels. I know that my daughter is 11 and she's in sixth grade, and all they've read are books by men about boys. I'm not happy with this choice, so I'm...
And it's shocking at this date.
It's so much available, too.
So I'm as a parent, I'm supplementing so she can read about powerful girls, girls like her, girls who are shy, or...
Right.
whatever she's going through. Mm-hmm. Because of that very reason, picture books didn't have black children in them for way too long. And our picture books still aren't nearly as diverse as they could be, but they are getting more diverse. Jacqueline Woodson's going to be here on April 1st. She has provided a lot of diversity. Augusta Baker was an amazing woman and storyteller, and that's where my foundation of storytelling came. So my art is different. Yes, I dabble in charcoal, it's true, but I will never show anybody my work. It's personal.
It's interesting that you say that in 2017 there's still such a limit on women in books, which is true. And it's funny that on the timing of that, because I recently just saw a video that was shared around Facebook on just that very thing, where this woman and her daughter decided to go into a library.
Turn all the books around that were by men.
Right. Take them
that.
Off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's cool. That was really cool.
And it was powerful. It was very powerful. And it's amazing just to see how little you're left with.
Yes. Because that's not really representative of reality.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder if we could do that at an art museum. Turn all the art backwards.
Yeah.
Cover up the statues.
Well, it's funny because, you know, even women in the arts, I told you that I felt like you were brave. But at the same point, you know, we're in the South. And the mindset of a Southern woman, I'm from Connecticut. And I graduated from Boston University. And I got my master's at Gibbs Boston. So Southern women, the mindset and the ability to, or the stereotype, it's very true that Southern women tend to, Southern artists, oh, they don't want to ruffle any feathers. They, you know, they don't want to impede upon anyone. They want to be nice. You know, they don't want to bulldoze through. And all of these very corporate type words come out when I talk to artists in small groups or just on mentoring.
Interesting.
And just talk about, you know, how to go in and talk to business owners or talk to patrons or talk about your art.
So you're teaching artists who don't necessarily know how to talk about themselves and sell themselves.
From the basic how to introduce yourself all the way up to how to create your biography or how to create just your artist statement and how to not begin it with the letter I and I and my and all of those simple things that I learned growing up and I learned through my education. But no matter how educated a person may be, even we have a wonderful librarian who retired from the Thomas Cooper Library, very well educated, but still was very fearful of coming out. And
because the stereotype is alive and well.
It is.
The good old boy system may still be present.
Right. One of my first nudes that I did was a woman reading a book nude on a toilet. And it was so denied and that's when I joined the Guerrilla Girls because it was an impressionist piece that looked like a Mary Cassatt piece. But the rendering was the same. She was sitting with her child, only in this one, she was sitting on a toilet reading a book. Oh, we can't see women in that light. We can't look at women sitting on a toilet because that makes them more human. And even this was in 93.
Wow.
And I did it as a powerful piece. But then my mother, who was from Alabama, was like, oh, you should have put a white negligee on her. So it was okay for her to sit on the toilet, but not for her to be nude sitting on a
Interesting.
Toilet. And for her to be reading a book on the toilet.
Interesting.
So, well, I spent my adult life looking at
it. But I wanted to chime in something real quick before I had to leave in this topic, if it's okay.
Yeah.
I was told in college by a male professor when I was getting my master's degree, who was looking at some of my work, that my work was too dramatic for the area in which I live, and that if I wanted to make it as an artist, I needed to paint things like landscape, especially landscape with flowers.
Oh,
my gosh.
Wow.
And I, you know, I know Alexandra knows my work, but I don't know, you know, my work is nothing like that. Nothing.
No.
I love flowers and I like landscape, but that was what the advice was given to me, was that some of my work I feel is my most powerful. It was rejected by the professor at this university, by this one professor.
Wow.
And he told me I'd never make it as an artist because it was too dramatic that people wanted to see happy things, especially landscapes and flowers.
Well,
and as a retort to that, I painted this very dramatic piece. I wish I could show it. A response to that, I did several pieces of the female figure that were very dramatic because it made me so angry. And it was so offensive because I don't think he would have told a male artist that.
No, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad you didn't listen to him, Amy.
Oh, I didn't. But guys, bye. But thank y'all so much for having me, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the podcast.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Michaela.
So I was saying that I was exposed to different kinds of work, and I was looking at Betty Saar and Elizabeth Catlett and all of these, you know, Selma Burke, all of these sculptors who were making art at times when women weren't doing a lot of things outside their homes. But that said, there's an article in Artsy from March 16th. It's a list of female art historians. And I'm going to read off the names so that our listeners can...
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll include it in the information. So go for it.
Lucy Arlapard, Kelly Jones, Hayden Herrera, Deborah Willis, Linda Nochlin, Svetlana Alpers, and Nada Shabout. Taina Carrigal. Let me spell that last one. It's T-A-I-N-A-C-A-R-A-G-O-L.
Very cool. That was the March 16th issue?
It's an online article. Right. Artsy. Artsy.com. Okay. So there's loads of information out there if you're really interested in seeing what women have been doing for.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be something that we can share with the listeners. And libraries support the arts.
Definitely.
Because libraries are a piece of the community. A central piece to a community. Many of them exhibit art. Many of them bring in artists to speak or performers to speak. Have any of you ever experienced libraries in your lives in any way, shape, or form? Whether not as a librarian. Okay, so all the librarians in the room don't get to talk about being a librarian. You don't get to talk about being a librarian.
The amount of books available about artists, I just ate that up as a kid.
Did you?
Yes. I wasn't a big reader as a child, but I did check out art books, so I just had a thirst for learning.
One of my favorite things growing up was always the summer reading program.
Yes.
And not only that, but I would always go down to my local branch and do the art projects that they had available.
Because they had art programs.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it was the best memories I ever had, and I remember those.
Go libraries.
Yay.
Yeah, really.
Anybody else?
Well... couple things. My art is research based, so I'm always in someone's stack somewhere. But also, as a maker, I'm a tactile person, and I still prefer a book.
The paper book, the hard copy, not the digital.
Having grown up in a culture of objects, they're important.
Yes.
It's interesting to watch museums shift toward digital.
Yeah.
And watch all of the books go away.
It's scary. We have an exhibit over at the Richland, and I walked in, and I had just come from an exhibit in Seattle, and it's all wavy, and it reminded me of some building I'd been in Seattle. I was like, ooh, it looks like Seattle, but where are the books? Where are the books? Where are they? It's scary.
Well, the Richland Library still has books.
It does, it does.
They've just changed around how it's all laid out. I'll speak up for them. They still have books.
That's what they assured me, because I will always voice my fears. I'm afraid. Where are your books?
I don't think books are ever going to go away.
They should
It's my
not.
Personal opinion. Not that of the State Library necessarily, but hopefully they agree with me. But I also don't think art is going to go away.
No.
Definitely not.
Is it going to become easier or harder for girls to grow up to be women artists?
It'll be easier.
Easier.
I think the challenges are the challenges that we sit in politically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So as the political climate changes, it changes what
as
struggles
lose
there are.
Opportunities. You know, if you roll back time, then you lose opportunities for a lot of things. I know people who would have studied art who were brilliant, but money was an issue.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Getting to school was an issue.
Mm-hmm. Always.
You know, not having the option of a Pell Grant.
Yep.
Means you study whatever is going to get you that good government job when you graduate, as opposed to study what you really desire.
Right.
So I think the answer to that is in what we do next, like how we behave as a culture. You know, what we decide is important.
Excellent point.
I've seen it at the young kids being taught fantastic art programs, and I think that's key if they can continue it through school and on. And then I agree with you, there's struggles after they finish school.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a real advocate and supporter of public education.
Oh, yeah.
And public schools are already struggling for arts education.
Absolutely.
And as they lose money, the arts are going to go even further away.
You know, growing up, I was born in Texas, lived there 5 years, and moved here. This is where my family's from South Carolina. But growing up here, I remember having art all the time through middle school. I had it every week. All year long.
Mm-hmm.
I had PE every week all year long. I had band every day all year long. I had a lot of art opportunities that I don't see now. My daughter gets 9 weeks of art.
In middle school.
She had one of the best art programs I've ever seen in a public school in fourth and fifth grade. That teacher was awesome. Mm-hmm. The elementary school was diverse. It was fantastic. And the art teacher there was extraordinary. She really inspired the children. It's too hit or miss now.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that changes too.
I don't know. It just depends. I mean, I moved to Lexington One School District on purpose because at the time the report card was excellent and the arts program was excellent. Mm-hmm. So my daughter was exposed and joined the orchestra in fifth grade, mm-hmm. which they offered at the time. And she went all the way up to her senior year. But also from the principal of the elementary school, Dr. B, mm-hmm. he would play cello and violin during their lunches. Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful supporting exposure in
That's
elementary
nice.
School. Her mm-hmm. middle school teacher was class A. I would go in and do different types of demonstrations with the art teacher, mm-hmm. and it was wonderful. And her high school teacher, he was wonderful. I mean, high quality. I mean, it was college quality art that these kids were putting out, and I was so proud to see that they had that. And now the River Bluff High School has the arts and media.
Yes, they do.
Each school in Lexington One has a major that kids can focus on, and they can go within the district.
Fantastic art teachers.
Yeah, really, really fantastic.
Again, it's very nice to hear that some districts are getting it right.
But it is hit or miss financially.
Jessica has to leave us. Say bye.
Bye.
but nice financially, meeting. I'm sorry, but financially, if you can't afford to live in that district.
That's right.
Then you're going to be in another school, which I've actually gone down to Ridgeway, South Carolina, where they have nothing. The district is bottomed out. It's sad. And they have nothing. They have very little education. They can't mm-hmm. afford to really pay teachers for much. So they do the math, the English, and, you know, a few here and there. But there's no arts at all. They may sit around with some scissors and some construction paper, and that's it. So it's really sad when you see other areas and other districts that don't get the funding mm-hmm. and that will now lose all of the funding. Mm-hmm. Because they're the ones that most desperately need it.
Whenever you were talking about great art teachers, I was thinking back to my childhood. And I was in Lexington School District 2. I went to Pine Ridge Middle School, went to Airport High School. And one of the most amazing people that I had in middle school is now a librarian. And so it was really cool. Pamela and I were talking about this in the last year.
It was such a funny experience.
It really was. So I taught a design class here at the State Library back in September and did not really pay attention to, apparently, who was in...
Her art teacher was a student.
Yeah. I wasn't paying attention. She came up to me after my first presentation, in between both of my presentations during the break, and she looked at me and she said, "Do you remember me?" And it took me a second, and I finally, you can see the lights in my face, you know, my face brightened up and the surprise in my face. And it was great to catch up with her because she was such a great influence on me. And we also talked about how some of the principles I was teaching were some of the principles that she taught me in that middle school.
Full circle stories. I love it.
That's great.
And it was just amazing.
So I know that when you mentor somebody or you teach somebody, you don't always get to hear back and you don't mm-hmm. get the feedback after their history has moved on. Mm-hmm. Have any of you had the opportunity to mentor somebody and get feedback and see the results and what it has meant to them?
I run into previous students a lot.
They come to her art shows.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see. To me, you know, it was just yesterday I saw them. To them, it was years ago. But they tell me, I loved art. It was my favorite subject. It's just really humbling that they really enjoyed that experience as a child mm-hmm. or as a high school student when I taught high school. So.
Right. So I don't do a lot of classroom teaching. I find myself in situations with younger artists one-on-one.
Right.
Just offering up advice. And then I'm doing visitor artists or visiting residencies at universities. And I have a classroom of students for one time.
Right.
So often you're trying to get out the larger messages and hopefully you touch one or two students. And periodically I hear from people who said, you know, I listened to you and I went to look for this and it was really helpful. And
you know, so it's real small, but sure. It's still encouraging.
Those
the idea
small
that you're
things.
Reaching forward and reaching mm-hmm. back at the same mm-hmm. time.
Forward and back at the same time. Those small things make such a big impact. It's like the story of the butterfly wings, you know, and wings of butterflies across the world can affect our weather here today. I mean, I love that story. I think it's fun. That small thing will lead to one step, and that one step leads to a journey. So
I had one of the best critiques I've ever had from an artist during a residency. That one encounter with this man whose work I respected has carried the work in a new direction. Sometimes a one-on-one is perfect.
Absolutely. I mean, I would hope that anytime any of you can inspire somebody individually that you do, I hope that you recognize that you're probably doing it with the art that you're producing and showing. Because whether you realize it or not, when people see your art, it impacts them personally, and sometimes at a very deep level. Mm-hmm. Do y'all recognize that about your own art?
I think there are moments.
Don't be humble right now. Come on.
I think most of us are really tackling difficult questions, and most of the time you're in your own head, and you're just trying to push through to the next piece of work mm-hmm. or the next question, really, you know, because you don't find answers necessarily. You just find more questions.
Mm-hmm. You just find more questions.
You hope that you're having a conversation with your audience.
I think
so you
are.
Hope that you're impacting them in that way.
Yeah. Sure. I think that you definitely are.
I like to be near my art whenever, like with the South Carolina Artist Group, when we have exhibits, I like to be near it. So that way when people, because they're going to ask me questions, what is this? Or, you know, if they're brave enough, some people, sure. Unfortunately, apathy has seeped so heavily into our common everyday society. So when people attend an art exhibit, if the artist is not standing nearby their art to say, hello, I'm the artist, this is my work, pull the person in. Mm-hmm. And I've had exhibits where people are just standing there looking at this big 6-foot tall tree with people coming out of it going, I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. And I'll just kind of help guide them and discuss the whole process of creating it and what I was thinking at the time.
Okay.
To help educate a person on how to view art and how to take it in.
So, what's a message to get to listeners who want to go appreciate art, to go view art? What do you tell somebody, a general population of, go see the art and think what you want to think?
Simply browse and rush through it.
What do you do?
Take your time. Look at each piece. Just look at each piece.
What are you looking for? This is called visual arts literacy. Right? I mean, isn't it? There's a literacy component here that
there
we aren't teaching people.
Well, it's different with pottery because when people look at it, it's a mug. It's not a message. It's no hidden meaning in it. It's a mug. It may have a mandal on it or tree or whatever. And they look at pottery and they think, I could get this at Target. Mm. Or they look at the price and they go, oh, okay, that's nice. Not realizing how many hours,
mm-hmm. right.
right,
weeks went into creating this mug.
Mm. And how unique it is.
Mm-hmm. And there's a reason they're not all alike, because each one's handmade. Mm-hmm. They resemble each other, but they're not all exactly.
Right.
And no matter how much information, and this is what I tell when I mentor other artists in the group, you know, you can put all of your hours and all of your time and all of your information on that, but people aren't going to read past the first and second sentences.
Right.
I mean, I actually used to do projects on this because I did so many art shows. I would go, Alexandra, Abstract Alexandra is da-da-da-da-da, and then the rest was, my feet are shiny and my toes are green. My feet are shiny, my toes are green. Uh-huh. No one ever questioned it. I'd have like two whole paragraphs, and no one read past the first and the second sentences. And I did this over 3 consecutive summers of doing over 50 art shows, and no one questioned it. And I said, okay, I'm done. I'm done with doing this expansive. I'm going to explain about it where they can read it, because people aren't going to read it.
Okay, yeah. That's like one of the saddest, funniest things
so
I've ever heard.
It's so sad. So it makes you go, okay, so what do I need to do? And that's when I started saying, we need to stand with our art. We need to, whenever we have a show.
You stand with your art, you stand for your art.
Right.
Definitely.
And you grab people, you make them pick out their favorite color. Just, you open up a line. It's like how would you talk to your children? How do you get your middle schooler to talk to you? You ask them what they had for lunch. So how do you get an observer?
Not yes or no questions.
Right. How do you get an observer to look at your art? What's your favorite color? When you were 5, what was your favorite color? Now at your age, what's your favorite color?
Mm.
Can you pick out your favorite color from this piece? And the first thing they'll do is they'll look for that color. Right. And then they'll step back and look.
And now they're already looking at it differently than they were when they walked up. That's more interactive.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds terrible to treat people like a middle schooler. And
well,
I'm not
saying
that.
Well, to me, that's almost treating people like they're learning how to read for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reading art is
you have to be taught.
That's a perfect way of putting it.
It's a literacy skill.
It is a literacy skill.
And I think a lot of us non-artists, and I can't actually qualify
that. No, you can't qualify.
A lot of non-artists might fail at that component. Mm-hmm. So
I see people. They're just
being
browsing.
Able to help them is a
they're
good
constantly
idea.
Browsing.
I think that you can start on a lot of different levels. I think there's something to get for everyone. And
yes.
I don't think that there's failure.
Okay.
Right.
I think when you step up to the work, you've made a brave decision to experience the art, and you've already succeeded.
Excellent.
And what you take from it, the more you look, the more you learn.
Mm-hmm.
You'll start to pick up on what good design looks like just because you've been looking at a lot of art, and you can trust yourself.
Right.
You can trust that you know what makes you happy, and you can trust that you know what you like. I think people should start with the art that they already like, and then venture into stuff that's a little more adventurous so that it doesn't scare them off right away. And it's okay for things to just be pretty. And we wouldn't be anywhere without utilitarian objects.
Mm-hmm.
We know
good
nothing
point.
About them. We're moving cultures without the utilitarian objects. So those are important, too.
So that's kind of like Jessica was saying earlier with being self-taught that art was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that she was taught. It's something that was self-created, that it was a possibility by exposing herself to the craft and to success.
She sought it out.
She took that initial step to look at the piece and look at another piece. That visual art literacy can be self-taught.
But that goes back to what you
But you
were
also
saying.
Have to trust yourself, right? Isn't there a component of self-trust,
mm-hmm.
both as a viewer of art and as an artist?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, art will never go away.
Right.
You can dismiss it, defund it, whatever. There's always going to be a rebellious person or a person who is just so in love with it that they'll do anything to hang on to it and create it and show their work wherever they want to, because they will get it done. And it's unfortunate that without funding, a lot of performing arts will go away because there's no funding. Not just performing arts, but you have the visual arts will lose so much without mm-hmm. funding. But at the same time, it's the people who will break their backs to get it done in the end who will keep it going. And I think that's something to recognize.
I think we'll always make art.
Mm-hmm.
But I do
so
worry
too.
About the defunding, because what happens mm-hmm. is people who are already living on the margins making art, they go away first. People with smaller voices or from smaller groups and communities, they stop being able to make art first.
Mm-hmm.
And so their voices aren't heard in the larger conversation. And when every voice is not present in the larger conversation, then we're not really getting a true picture of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have a true picture of humanity, then we can't possibly understand how to relate to each other and how to get along.
Mm-hmm.
That's for
you
sure.
know, so defunding art means silencing a lot of people, and silencing a lot of artists. And if you look at where the funding yeah. goes, the State Arts Commission is funded by the NEA. The NEA funds the Fairfield County Arts Commission. The Fairfield County Arts Commission, or club, because I think it's a club there, they fund the Ridgeway Arts Festival.
Right.
So this small community that's not getting art in school
mm-hmm.
can still have art because
right.
the funds have trickled down.
Right.
So by defunding the NEH, the Institute for Museum and Libraries, by defunding the Humanities Councils, we're silencing a lot of voices on the edge.
I don't like that idea.
It's we have to understand it in order to fight it.
But I also think it's a really good note to end the podcast on.
Definitely.
It's a powerful. It's no, you don't.
No,
you don't talk enough.
Yeah. I was sitting there just thinking that too.
Can we just start over and just have you talk? No, it's an honor to have you here and for you to share your voice.
Thank you.
And to speak for many of the other voices that are maybe smaller and quieter than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. And I think art is a good tool for doing that as well. I think libraries are too.
I think so.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Sandy, my beloved Potter, my In Search of Zen friend, thank you for being here today and for sharing your art in the art show.
You're welcome.
I love it.
I love it too.
I know you do. I'm so happy.
Is that a problem for you?
I can't do it frequently enough.
Right. One day. Jenny, thank you so much for coming in. And the question I have to ask this one last quick question. In your collage work that you have hanging here, you have redacted words in the backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because the words really don't matter.
It creates such a neat texture.
That's what I use it for.
To the background. But when it's in a library and you have redacted words. When I look at it, so when I look at it, I look at it and go, oh, what a neat texture. Why are those redacted?
Was that your intention?
Yeah, a little bit.
So it has a double meaning to that. So I promised I would ask.
Kind of cool, too, when you think about Women Speak and you're taking away
which is the name of
the
gallery.
It's an amazing piece to actually include in the gallery for that reason. Too. Okay. That's what I think about.
Women speak in many different ways and different colors and different sounds. Installation art was my last question, Michaela. Tell the audience, because I know some of the listeners have no clue what that means.
I create environments and I hope to move people through the environment to impact them towards certain messages, or certain conversations that I'm trying to have. So I might hang a room full of long shrouds of paper that I've made to look like fabric so that they have to meander in a certain way. And I might create an environment that I think looks like a forest-like environment to talk about that period of history during the Fugitive Slave Act. So that what would it look like to run through all of these tangled vines? And I'm interested in science fiction, so sometimes it's a landscape of glass and sand.
That sounds
powerful.
So
that's what my art is. It's a little ephemeral, but
okay. So I've got to start following you so I can see when you're installing something nearby, so I can come see.
Or if you need assistance.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
Always.
Oh.
Cool.
All right, fun. Folks. That's it. We didn't keep it short today, but we kept it sweet.
Well, we kept it sweet.
That's right. Alexandra, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Michaela, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Katie, thanks for being here. Anytime, Pamela.
All right, everybody. I'm Pamela, and we're keeping it sweet. No, okay, I'm Pamela.
I'm Katie.
And we're keeping it long
and sweet.